it's like when you cross that white line, it's that's all that's there. You can't think about nothing else. Like the night Seamus broke his leg, my wife had a miscarriage that morning.
Oh my God. Right.
And I knew James McCarthy might be struggling. And Martin said, you might be starting because James is struggling.
And she phoned you and you're over in Ireland?
Yeah.
Right.
So I laugh about it now, like, but at the time there was no laughing matter. She obviously, it happened naturally, so I don't want to go into too much detail.
No,
but
don't.
Like ambulances had to come to the house. So she's ringing me. I'm in Ireland. I'm in the hotel, like trying to prepare for a game. So then she gets rushed to hospital. Luckily enough, now I have a pair of neighbours across the road, Graham and Sue, amazing people, came over, minded my little girl. Then Curtis Davis and his wife came, because Callie was really good friends with Laura. She came to mind Alana, because Alana's like familiar with her and whatever.
Yeah.
So Callie was in the hospital, and she was off the walls. Then her mum had to come over. So it was kind of like, what do I do?
I mean, you must think, I've got to go. Or did you know I'm not going?
I can't say I didn't know I was going. I spoke to my father. Father said, you have to go. It's your wife, like, it's your family, you have to go. And then Martin, I went and spoke to Martin. Martin says, you have to go. And then as the time went by, like, it just became like, when can I get there? And this is the God's honest truth, is when can I get there? I wouldn't have gotten there. Like, she was rushed into hospital about 11:30, 12:00. I wouldn't have gotten there till about like 5, 6 o'clock. So it was kind of like, what do I do? And then she was like, look, I'm okay now. Everything's fine. So then I was like, oh, do I go? And like, blah, blah, blah. And then I just said, do you know what? A little bit more time passed by and she said, look, I'm all right, I'm fine. So then I made a decision to stay. Look, should I have gone? Yeah, I heard about it when I went home. She said, you weren't from there, Mama. But then I see in my household, if you say, you're fine. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like if she turned to me and said, I really need you here, I was gone.
Of course, yes.
She'd said, I'm fine. And I was thinking, right, she's all right. And like I knew her mom, her dad were there. Mm. Do you know what I mean? My daughter was fine, blah, blah, blah. And then I ended up playing the game. James got injured in the warm-up, I believe. And then I remember I was warming up. We were just kicking a few balls around. And then Mick, the kit man, ran out and was like, Myler, the manager wants you. And he's like, you're starting. So played. I believe we drew nil all.
Was it difficult to play? When you're waiting for a kick out, do those thoughts cross your mind?
Weirdly enough, like, you know, that was obviously the night James broke his leg. So like, as much as I was dealing with my own things, I tend to deal with things differently than my wife. Like at the moment, she's scared that in 6 months' time, my retirement will hit me rather than now. She deals with things then and there. I tend to like worry about her, and then 4 or 5 months down the road, it hits me. Like that happened with the miscarriages.
Right.
But then even then, I was concerned about Seamus. Like thinking, is he all right and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But like we all go through difficult times or whatever, it's how we deal with them. Probably took me 4 or 5 months to deal with that then. Do you know what I mean? At the time, I could probably just bog myself down in football and, do you know, concentrate. No, I'd play the game.
Mm.
I think if the manager's putting huge faith in me here, like he could have easily picked someone else. I need to repay him with a performance. Do you know what I mean?
It's extraordinary. Like in a million years watching that game, just not thinking that, you know, when you...
Yeah, of course. And then you're like, you even... Do you know what I mean?
It's probably saying, how did Myler play? Ah, he wasn't, you know, could have
been better. Yeah.
And he was somebody that, as a player and a person that I spent time with around the team environment, that I got on very well with.
Did you hesitate when he asked? Did you deliberate for a number of days? Did you take advice?
No, I didn't, because, like I say, ultimately, when a friend needs something, and like I say, you emphasise that, like what they were accused of, you know, when you're doing a character witness, that is, you have to just testify to what you're impressed of their character is from spending time with them.
Mm. So then it was day two when you went, because you were off training that day. Wednesday is your day off.
And a certain confluence of events probably added to the charge nature of the atmosphere generally and to the reaction around you. Because on day one, two things in particular happened which obviously made headlines. One, certain details of the WhatsApp messages were widely reported on, and as you can imagine, everybody took a dim view of them. And then secondly, there was a text from the complainant in the case sent the morning after the alleged incident, where she had said one of her concerns about going to authorities was to go up against Ulster Inc. in effect. Not a direct quote, but that was what she had said. Given that, the appearance of the Irish and Ulster rugby captain alongside another teammate certainly caught people's eye, to say the least. So were you aware of that on day one? Had you seen that on day one? Did that give you extra pause for thought?
I think probably the first thing is to say that the stuff around the text messages, you know, like as a, I suppose as a normal citizen, if you like, you know, like you don't approve of that at all. You don't agree with any of that. And like I said, from the character witness point of view, it was about testifying to his character. So under no circumstance did I find anything in that WhatsApp group that was anything less than, you know, grossly wrong. Mm. And I think as well, it needs to be said that as a rugby player, you have a role, you know, you are a role model and you have a responsibility to conduct yourself that way. I think on the second thing, I think ultimately you're in a bit of a bubble, and look, it's not an excuse and it can be misstrewn whatever way it want, but like you're in a bit of a bubble, and there is no way that I would ever have went to that court case knowing I didn't go there as the Irish captain. I went there as a friend who was just sort of seeing whether I definitely still wanted to be a character witness. And I think that the ramifications, like you are in a bubble.
Except the friend point, but equally the good and the bad, you are also just Rory Best rugby captain. You know, if you do ambassadorial work, if you do commercial work, part of your billing is I am Rory Best, the Ireland captain. Therefore, you know, I am a brand in itself and I carry a weight, and I have no doubt that is why the defence team thought you might be a good character witness. So whilst it's an extra burden to be captain on top of private citizen, you have to accept. You can't just stroll into court and disassociate that.
I get that now in hindsight. And look, I'll be the first to admit that I was unbelievably naive to think that isn't the way it would be brought across. But I can assure you, Joe, that was never of my intention. And, you know, I look back now in hindsight and I didn't think at the time, because, you know, look, ultimately I'm a trusting person. And I look back now and I do think that I was used. I didn't ever think that it would be that case, but I have no doubt, like you said yourself, that it suited the prosecution to have me there.
The defence, to
have me there because of, and I think that I became a pawn in it, and that is the bit that, like,
yeah.
I think now in hindsight, you know, looking at that, you know, it was bad advice for me to be there. And look, I was, like I say, naive enough to think that I could go there as a friend. And look, I accept exactly what you're saying. And like, ultimately, you know, you go to all these roles as the captain, and I don't know why I thought this would be different, but look, ultimately I did. And that is one of the things that I'm very sorry for, because it was never, ever my intention to cause any more distress on what was a very, very difficult day mm-hmm. for that poor girl anyway.
And when you say I was naive and I was in a bubble, do you mean to say that you hadn't followed day one, you hadn't seen her text the next morning? Like, surely, really, you must have been aware.
Like, of course you were aware, but...
And did that not make you think, she's literally said, part of the issue here for me is going up against Ulster Inc., whatever that means. I think we sort of know what she means. Did part of you not think, we need to have a second thought about our plan tomorrow here, on that basis?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, again, with the benefit of hindsight, you know, you would have taken a second and done that. But I think it was kind of at a point where, you know, I felt that I had said to Paddy I would be a character witness, and I said I would be there, someone to talk to if you needed to talk to. And I kind of felt that, and this is all in hindsight, I don't think that there's no way that Paddy would have ever have used something like that. But I do think that, like I say, I do think that I was used, and that is the bit that I'm most sorry for and I regret the most.
Because you said after the game in Paris that as a character witness, it was important I got both sides of the story. You said that was the legal advice from senior counsel. That was from Jackson's defence team, was it?
It was, yeah.
Okay. So as you said, as a character witness, you're not there to be an expert on the case. You're not there to judge anything. And also, like, did it not occur to you okay, to get both sides, fine. This is like a 42-day case. What can I get in one day?
Yeah, I think that, like I say, I was just there that they advised me, and like I know now and in hindsight that was wrong and that I shouldn't have been there. But I think...
Did you take independent legal advice around that time?
No, I didn't. And again, that was more mistakes, because I think when you're a reasonably trusting person, you kind of think that, oh, look, well, if they're saying this, then, you know, it must be for my benefit. When, look, it turned out it wasn't, and if anything, it was not, I suppose, my benefit or detriment, it was irrelevant in it, but it just turned it into a circus, and it put a lot more pressure on something that was very sensitive. And like I said before, I think that is the thing that I definitely regret the most, that, you know, to turn it into, to, I suppose, turn up the magnifying glass on it, like that, is just something that, I suppose you say you live and learn, but this was a big thing that you had to live and learn for.
Because from a defence point of view, certainly your presence in front of the jury, crucially, in front of everybody, a big statement, in many respects, your presence alone on that day is every bit as effective as being a character witness and taking to the stand and testifying. So in a sense, it was job done. Rory Best's stamp of approval.
And that, like I say, is the thing that I regret the most, is that, and you know, there's no, under no circumstances did I go there. I know people are going to listen and go, how could he not? This is foolish. But like, I don't want to keep saying you're in a bubble, because that's not an excuse. And you know, with all the sort of people that have their opinions, and people have some very extreme opinions, and you know, that is the bit that no matter what people say to me, that I know in myself that I was probably used a little bit. And again, like not by Paddy, but by his team. And like, ultimately, that is a bit that I have to sort of live with, in that I caused undue stress to people. And like, I would like to think that I'm a, like, one of the reasons I wanted to step down as captain is because I, you know, from a humane point of view, we're putting pressure on people, and that is not something that I would ever want to do.
So the charge, for instance, that in some respects, and it is only people trying to speculate, because I certainly haven't spoken to the complainant, I don't know, but the charge might be that, well, it was an extra layer of intimidation. What's your response to that?
I was very privileged and honoured to somewhat and survive K2 last year. Mm.
It's not a normal way, I suppose, a conventional way to make your way through the world. So I'm curious as to how you arrived at this lifestyle choice, because you're a family man, you've four children, and these are dangerous pursuits, and they're difficult pursuits.
Yeah,
and
really difficult, yeah.
Require sacrifices. You said sport is your salvation.
Yeah, it really is my salvation. And, you know, I suppose, you know, people can put you on a pedestal and look about what you achieve, but behind it all, there's a journey, and behind it all, there's a huge commitment. And behind it all, there's a start line. And it started for me in Donegal as a young boy, starting out as a Cub Scout at 6 years of age. I was blessed to be introduced to the great outdoors by two wonderful leaders. And they introduced me to the mountains and the rivers and the lakes, and I just fell in love with Mother Nature. And it became a critical crutch for me later in life, because I had a very happy young life up until I went to secondary school in Letterkenny, and I fell to the hands of an extremely violent bully who over a period of 6 years destroyed my education. And it was a physical and mental battle every day to be at school, and I was from the countryside, and I was really struggling to process it. And I suppose Ireland back then was a very different world. You know, the support mechanisms to deal with, no doubt, a youthful depression is what I had at the hands of the bully. Even the effects of the bully and how to handle the bully weren't there. I chose not to tell my mum and dad, because I could see life at home was extremely difficult. They were working really hard to keep food on the table for four kids. And I walked out of that school at 17 with no junior cert and no leaving cert. And it's quite interesting, you know, the junior cert and the leaving cert started today. And I was just giving that a bit of thought coming down the road, you know, walking out of there in 1988 with no qualification to my name. The road to the left and to the right was extremely dark, and I was really tumbling through life. I didn't really have a direction. And the only thing that kept me sane, kept me grounded, was sport. When I turned around, the great outdoors, whether it was on the bicycle or in the mountains or in the rivers, It was the one environment that didn't judge me.
Yes.
And it just allowed Jason Black to be Jason Black. Because I felt judged every day at school by the bully because of how I looked and how I behaved. I felt judged by not getting results at school by the teachers. And
did any of the teachers say, Jason, you seem smart, you seem like you should be doing better than you are?
No, what's I think it was a different
here?
Ireland.
Is everything okay?
No, it was a different Ireland. You know, today I spend a huge amount of time back in the schools talking to young kids, particularly young boys, 15 to 17, and girls, about not being afraid of life and not being afraid of the challenges of life and setting goals and dreams. So I think, you know, I'm experiencing a different school today. When I'm in the schools, the teachers are incredible. They're young, they're creative, they're engaged. The students respect them. There's an open line of communication to the teachers and to the students today. That didn't exist in the 80s in Ireland. Sad as it was, you know, I missed an education, not because I was a stupid young fella. I lost the love for school. I just lost the love for being there.
Well, I can imagine.
Yeah.
We've all come across bullies at school.
Yeah.
Because they're in every walk of life.
Yeah.
When you say, you know, the way you acted, or like, what was it that this bully, clearly unhappy in his own life, in his own weird way, what was it that he was targeting you over?
I think it was because I was from the countryside. Growing up in Donegal, I was from a more rural part of Letterkenny, and he was from the town itself. He was more in tune with, and streetwise, I wasn't. Yeah. I was coming in green behind the ears.
He spotted that probably.
He spotted it, and I was vulnerable. You know, I'm a big guy, 6'2" today, and I'm well able to handle myself today. But when I was 13, I wasn't. I was a young, slow grower, and I was vulnerable. And you know, it was a horrible time because my secondary school, my national school, we didn't have a uniform, and I was super excited about the next chapter in my life, the next journey, because I was getting a new uniform, new books, new bag. I was getting a school bus for the first time ever to school.
Yeah.
And it was this magical journey, you know, that I was about to take place. And it was incredible that it all fell apart.
Do you kind of mourn that?
I did for a long number of years. Yeah. You know, there's no question that, you know, the scars of a bully can't be seen. You know, I would love to have had a black eye, a bruised arm. I would love to have, you know, a cut, and somebody could have asked the question, because I wasn't creative or courageous enough to say help. And it's probably my biggest regret, if I'm being very honest, you know, that I didn't have the courage to say stop or please help. I chose to suck it up. And, you know, that's what I say today to young people, and indeed to people in employment, to people in marriages, you know, because bullying's taken the form in incredible ways today. People's vulnerabilities with the homelessness, with the pressures of mortgages, you know, employers are putting them under extreme pressures, you know, and tenants, landlords are putting tenants under extreme pressures because they know they're exposed.
Yeah.
And it's a very traumatic place to be.
Was it physical? Was it verbal mainly?
It was a bit of both.
And a kind of a constant thing during
every
the day.
Day? And, you know, for me, like, it was at 9 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the evening. And
yeah.
I could escape it at four. And this is what I do talk about today with the online platforms that we have. The bully can exist 24/7.
Sure.
And it's horrendous, the online bully, you know, that keyboard warrior, the real coward that can hide behind it and be so destructive.
I'm sure you could to a point, but equally, 7 o'clock in the evening, 8 o'clock in the evening, 9 o'clock, nearly bedtime, nearly back in it tomorrow. You never fully escaped it, I'm sure.
No, do you know, 8 o'clock in the morning was the worst. The minute I opened my eyes, that 8 to 9 was horrendous. Eating my breakfast, you know, just picture eating the bowl of cornflakes and the hair standing on the back of your neck, not able to eat the food. You know, your mum's kind of quizzing what's going on. You're hiding it as best you can, knowing that when you walk through those gates, it's just going to start again. And
other kids laugh, other kids don't want it to be them, so they're happy enough to.
And we didn't, as a society, you know, I don't blame anybody. Like, I don't blame the school, I don't blame my parents, I blame the bully, but I don't blame the other parts of the jigsaw puzzle, because it was a different Ireland.
Sure.
You know, and we all weren't trained to deal with the effects of it. And but the scars were horrendous, you know. It got to the point where, you know, I'd lost complete faith in myself. Mm. I had no confidence in myself. And
because a friend of mine in his 50s recently was talking about being bullied at school. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said he can still feel it now in himself when something small might happen and he might feel like he's been personally jilted. It might be someone in a shop, absolutely, you know, not giving charity. Just small little things. And I can almost feel he's more sensitive to it than other people.
Yeah, that anybody that's been...
It has shaped him.
Anybody that's been at the cutting edge of it will feel it, taste it, smell it.